The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Medical Mutual wants to remind you it's almost time for Medicare's annual enrollment period. As a trusted health insurer for more than 90 years, Medical Mutual is here to help you find better Medicare benefits. Be confident you're getting the most from your Medicare Advantage plan. Schedule your free Medicare plan review today at medmutual.com/review. Medical Mutual, Ohio's hometown Medicare insurer.
It's the Crossover Sports Illustrated's NBA show. Breaking down the latest news, rumors, and everything in between. Here's your host, Chris Mannix and Rohan Lockhart.
This is the Crossover NBA podcast. I'm Chris Mannix, joined this week by longtime NBA writer, now working over at Sportskeeda, Fox Sports Radio, among several publications, Mark Medina. And Mark, we have to join the chorus, right? Like sometimes I like to, you know, zig when others are zagging, but in the case of this podcast, we have got to discuss what happened on All-Star Sunday, and really what happened on All-Star Weekend. If you missed it, and I don't think that's possible, the All-Star game was one of the worst that the NBA has ever seen. After promising that this game would be more competitive than games in the past, it was not. After promising that more defense would be played, not in so many words, but implying that there would be a better game. This is Adam Silver saying this. It was not. You had the highest scoring half in All-Star history. You had the highest scoring game in All-Star history. And you had the first team in All-Star game history scoring 200 points in a game. So not what the NBA was looking for with its All-Star game. So I'll frame the question this way, Mark. How bad was this for the NBA? Because as we record this, I don't know what the ratings were. I'd imagine they're probably going to be right along with what they were last year. 4.5 million, 5 million, 5.5 million, something along those lines, which is still a pretty big number for an NBA game. That's probably going to wind up outrating every NBA regular season game that they've played to date. So, you know, in that context, how bad was this event for the NBA?
Yeah, well, to answer the factual questions here, I did receive a notice earlier today that the ratings were up from 20% last year. So that's good. But as far as the game itself, it was not good whatsoever. And that's saying a lot because I thought last year's game was horrific, with exception to some of those moments that Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum with having some of the one-on-one matchups. In this year's game, you know, you had some entertaining moments, right? Like Damian Lillard hitting from the logo, hitting from half court, one of the many reasons why he got the All-Star MVP. You saw some entertaining moments with the two-man game with Luka Doncic and Nikola Jokic, but those are social media moments. As far as the game itself, it was entirely unwatchable. And Chris, I read your column earlier today at SI.com, and I thought you brought a lot of good perspective that this isn't about bemoaning the All-Star game and hoping it's how it was in the past. Like, that ship has sailed. The NBA, to its credit, has tried to come up with incentives, but if this game is going to exist, it has to change. It has to at least be entertaining. We're not expecting game seven finals intensity. We're not even expecting playoff intensity, but it has to be entertaining. And I think even through that lens, the game failed.
Yeah, it did fail. And I don't know that there is anything the NBA can do to fix it. You know, they've tried every format that, or almost every format they possibly could. They have gone from ditching the East versus West traditional format. They have installed the draft. They have named team captains. They have changed the way the game is scored when it comes by quarters. They have installed an Elam ending. Everything they have tried has not yielded competition. And that's what the NBA is looking for. They're looking for a throwback type of game. Some kind of thing you saw in the 80s and 90s where players were playing with close to regular season-like intensity. And I don't think that's ever going to happen. I've seen some people throw out the idea of a U.S. versus the world type of game. Sure, that'd be fun. But two of the biggest, not criminals in all this, but the two biggest perpetrators of a bad All-Star game were Luka Doncic and Nikola Jokic, who neither one of them looked like they had any interest in playing there. So I don't know that making it a U.S. versus the world competition is going to spice it up enough to make it a more competitive game. And really, you know, with these numbers, I don't know that there's a huge incentive to make it that way. Yeah, people like you and me can't stand it. And social media largely can't stand it. And Adam Silver certainly can't stand it. But there's an audience watching it, right? Like, there's an audience of 5 million plus people that are watching this game. So I think we just have to accept it for what it is. It's never going to be a intense regular season like atmosphere where the NBA missed, or what they missed on, is having a competitive final 5 minutes. Like in the past, we've seen 3.5 quarters of bad basketball, but when the game was close, it got competitive because guys started to get those juices flowing and they wanted to win the game. We didn't have that in this past All-Star game, which I think made things significantly worse. So I don't know if you have a cure-all for this. I don't know if you have a suggestion for Adam Silver, if he's listening right now, but in my opinion, there's nothing the NBA can do to make this a competitive game. I don't think financial incentive is going to work. I don't think changing a format again is going to work. These guys make too much money. And you heard what Anthony Edwards say after the game was over. He said, look, I never planned on this being a competitive game. He was always going to treat this like a glorified exhibition game. Players want to get in. They want to get out. They want to play injury-free, and they want to have a good time over their All-Star break. And that's what they consider it, an All-Star break. And over a break, you are not going to play all that hard. So I don't know if you have a suggestion, but I'm out of them.
Yeah, I'm with you in the sense that any idea that we can ever have this All-Star game be like what it was in the 80s, 90s, even the early 2000s, that's a lost cause. I haven't talked with Rick Barry, a former NBA player, who is always opinionated about things. And he's like, that's never going to happen. Like, the owners, they don't want a super competitive game because there's so much money on the line where guys could get hurt. But it's hard for me to wrestle with the idea that, oh, there's nothing we can do to change this. This is the way it should be. If this is the way it is, I would say we should just scrap the game altogether and come up with alternative events. Now, to what you were saying about, okay, what are some proposals? I'm with you that the financial incentives, they're already there, and I don't know if that will actually address anything. I would hope, and I presume that Adam Silver and Joe Dumars, when they talked with the group, they reinforced this idea that when you're looking at a tentpole event, like, this is part of the media rights deal. This is part of the total revenue and BRI that can affect it. So I think that even though the viewership numbers can be higher, when they're in the middle of this media rights deal, arguably, whether it's with a streaming platform that could be sold for an individual event or if it's part of the total package, I think having a better All-Star game in terms of its quality can enhance that number. And obviously, provide a trickle-down effect. Now, what are the solutions? I'm with you that I'm running out of them, but if the All-Star game isn't going to at least have competitive moments, guys wanting to showcase, you know, not, again, regular season intensity, let alone playoff intensity, but fun competitive moments and that they're going to take the game somewhat seriously, let's just make it an All-Star event filled with building off the three-point contest, building off of what Steph Curry and Sabrina Ionescu showed this season, and then, you know, have new events, whether it's one-on-one, three-on-three, and things of that sort, as opposed to just saying, you know what, we're going to have this game that's inevitably going to be terrible. Let's just live with it.
Yeah, I'm with you on All-Star Saturday being addressable. I think that is something that can be fixed. I think you start by eliminating some of the stuff that's already there. I think the slam dunk contest has seen better days, Mark. I really do. I mean, Mac McClung no disrespect to Mac McClung, who had some fantastic dunks this past weekend, but he has played a grand total of 4 NBA games, and he has won 2 slam dunk contests. Jacob Toppin, rookie. Jaime Jaquez Jr., rookie. Give Jaylen Brown credit for participating, but we need more guys on Jaylen Brown's level or above to make this dunk contest interesting, and I don't think there's any way we're going to get that. I think that ship has long since sailed. I think you can mothball that. I also think you can mothball the skills competition, which, you know, when I saw Anthony Edwards out there shooting left-handed, that's when I knew, like, this thing had seen better days. Like, you don't need to do the skills competition anymore. I love the Steph versus Sabrina competition. Like, that made that night memorable. When the NBA put out that number that there were 10 million unique viewers, whatever that means, I think a lot of that was due to Steph versus Sabrina. And that is something that can both be duplicated and can be built on, right? So you have a rematch maybe during WNBA All-Star Weekend. That's great. And then you get to next year where All-Star Weekend is at the Chase Center, Steph's home court. I believe Sabrina's from the Bay Area. You expand on that, like Caitlin Clark from Iowa. She could be in the WNBA next year. She is one of the most electrifying shooters that we have seen in the women's game. Damian Lillard just won the three-point contest from the Bay Area, from Oakland. Add him. How about Dame and Steph versus Sabrina and Caitlin? How about that? 2-on-2. And then you keep building. Like, as more women enter the WNBA with this elite-level shooting skill, and that's going to keep happening. These are not aberrations. Sabrina's not an aberration. Caitlin Clark's not an aberration. Like, these women are going to continue to come into the league with great shooting skills. Keep building it out. Maybe eventually you have 3-on-3. Maybe you have 4-on-4. Maybe it's 5-on-5. WNBA versus NBA shooting competition. That's great. I think that should become the tentpole event of All-Star Saturday. So I think that gets moved up. Keep the three-point contest, which is still pretty good, I think, the main three-point contest, and add something different. I think they should add a one-on-one competition. Now, I've been saying this for years. I've been beating this drum for year after year after year. NBA players don't care about being the skills champion. NBA players no longer care about being the slam dunk champion. What I think they do care about, or will care about, is being the best one-on-one player in the NBA, the metaphorical king of the court. So I think if you establish a one-on-one competition, however you want to do it, maybe it's a king of the court style contest, maybe it's a round robin type of thing, however you want to do it, I think that would entice some of the top one-on-one players in the NBA. I think you could get, you know, Paul George to compete in something like that. You could get Giannis to compete in something like that. You could get Anthony Edwards to compete in something like that. All the top skill guys, you could get them competing in a one-on-one competition. So a lot of things I think need to change with All-Star Saturday, but I think there are solutions to that problem. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. The skills competition, every time I see it, I get confused with the rules and the fact that it's just weird to watch. It makes me not want to watch it anymore. The dunk contest, look, Mac McClung's great, but to your point, he's a G League player, and it was starting to get old that the only idea outside of what Jaylen Brown was doing, which wasn't great anyway, was using Shaq as a prop. Like, the novelty of that's going to quickly wear off, and it represents what has been wrong with the dunk contest for a while now, that as entertaining as it once was with even seeing the top dunkers and seeing their athleticism, there's only so many things you can do before dunking the basketball, where with the three-point shot, it kind of is what it is. You either make the shot or you don't. There's not an expectation for style points other than, you know, do you make the money ball or not? And so I think when you look at the fact that that is what it is, the game has been obviously growing with an increasing importance of three-point shooting. There's a lot of great three-point shooters, and the WNBA has grown in popularity and stature. I think that this has essentially become a cottage industry, to your point, that there's not going to be any shortage of combinations, whether it's to what you're saying, the traditional three-point contest, the WNBA, maybe even expanding it with nominating the best shooting backcourt or the best at least two-man game of each team and have a two-on-two, so to speak, of which best duos shoot the best threes. And then I would also expand to what you're saying, one-on-one, to make a two-on-two, three-on-three. Have, whether it's, you know, the combination of fan votes, media votes, and players or coaches or all the above, you know, let's see who are the best one-on-one players, the best duos in the NBA. And I think because it will be a lot less intensity that's asked of a traditional All-Star game, I think that there will be more of a buy-in, as well as the fact that this is something new.
Yeah, the greatest video game, arguably, in basketball history is NBA Jam. Like, great video game. Like,
well, I will say this. Well, the refs cannot allow the kind of fouling that we saw in NBA.
Correct. Yeah, correct. But NBA Jam, one-on-one competition, two-on-two competition, I would love to see it. All right, that's enough oxygen spent on the All-Star weekend. Tough for the NBA to have, like, a bad night like they had this past Sunday on a week that followed where there was nothing else to talk about. Like, you weren't talking NFL, you weren't talking baseball, you weren't talking hockey, you weren't talking college basketball. The NBA was front and center, and they had a dud, and it was on every single show, and as we're doing right now, on every single podcast. Let's move on. A couple things I want to get to when it comes to the second half of the season, which is really the stretch run of the season, 30-some-odd games to go in the NBA regular season. Two of the most interesting teams out there are the Lakers and the Milwaukee Bucks. The Lakers enter the All-Star break playing really good basketball. D'Angelo Russell is playing out of his mind since January 1st. LeBron and AD are playing at an All-Star, All-NBA level. But the Lakers are still squarely in that play-in mix. They elected to do nothing at the trade deadline. Their big move was to sign Spencer Dinwiddie, and now they're crossing their fingers, hoping that guys like Jared Vanderbilt and Gabe Vincent are going to be able to come back before the end of the regular season. So I'll ask it this way. What do you think the ceiling is of this Lakers team? Assuming they make no further moves with buyout guys or anything else, what do you think the ceiling of this team is?
Yeah, Chris, great question. Assuming that, relatively speaking, on paper, there's no major injuries that affect the dynamic across the league, I think that the ceiling for the Lakers is to get to the second round. And that's assuming that LeBron James and Anthony Davis are obviously healthy, still playing at a high level. D'Angelo Russell, I think that we've seen throughout his career, it's inevitably he's going to play with peaks and valleys, hot shooting nights, bad shooting nights. But I think, as we saw last season, even through those ups and downs, I've always thought that while D'Angelo Russell certainly and has never been untouchable when it comes to what his free agent's destination would be or trade talks, I think the larger point through the ups and downs is he was a really key piece of that engine that made sure that the offensive system ran smoothly because of his shooting, because of his playmaking, overall presence with his floor spacing. I'm not getting my hopes up that Gabe Vincent is going to be, you know, healthy or have substantial time, but there certainly is a realistic window for Jared Vanderbilt and Cam Reddish and Max Christie to have a cleaner bill of health. But, you know, while you don't rule anything out, especially when you're looking at the teams like the Clippers and the Phoenix Suns, given their injury history, I just don't think even in best case scenarios that they can get past the Denver Nuggets or even some of the young up and coming teams that are solidifying themselves as true playoff contenders like Oklahoma City and Minnesota. But you know what, given where they're at, I know the Lakers aren't about this. LeBron James certainly isn't about this, but I think second round is as best as realistically as they can come, assuming again that there's no outside extenuating circumstances with injuries that just change the entire landscape.
Yeah, I'd like to be more bullish on the Lakers. God knows I was last year, and right around this time I was predicting a run to the
conference. Well, let's hear the pick. Let's hear the pick.
I don't have it. I don't have it in me this year, Mark, to make to believe in this Lakers team. I agree with what you're saying about Russell. He's been fantastic of late, but he's got a history of being great and then being not so great. And the Lakers really can't afford, you know, their third best offensive option being as uneven and unreliable as D'Angelo Russell has been. And look, I would say second round as well, but man, like, it's going to be a fight for them to get out of the play-in tournament if they wind up there. I mean, look at the teams right now that are in the play-in tournament field. You've got Dallas, which just made a bunch of moves to upgrade its roster. You've got Sacramento, which is still largely the team that we saw last year in the top of the Western Conference standings. Some of their guys have underachieved, but they're still capable of getting back to that high level. You get the Warriors, who, you know, are 8-2 in their last 10 games, starting to show some signs of life there. So if the Lakers wind up in that mix and have to play two of those teams just to get into the postseason, I mean, getting in just might be a challenge. And look, if they get in and they wind up playing Oklahoma City in the first round, maybe. they can win a series like that, but I mean, Minnesota, can they beat the Timberwolves? Like, I think it's time to accept that Minnesota's pretty good, right? I know we've been waiting and waiting and waiting to make it, draw any conclusions about Minnesota, but they're 7-3 in their last 10. They went to the break winning 4 straight. They're a great defensive team. Things are working in Minnesota. Oklahoma City, the one thing they don't have is experience. The Clippers, they might overtake Oklahoma City in the second half, and when they're healthy, they're as good as any team in the NBA. Denver is in that mix as well. The ceiling is a trip to the second round, and that is a ceiling I think they might have a really hard time getting to because of the challenges they're going to face early on. This is not, you know, a situation like last year where they got a banged-up Memphis team in the first round. They were able to build on that and advance deeper into the playoffs. This is a very different type of landscape they're facing in the Western Conference, which brings me to the other question about the Lakers I want to ask you. The reporting this past week by ESPN was that Golden State made a run at LeBron James. Now, it never really reached a level where they were discussing specific players because it was clear that LeBron did not want to be traded from Los Angeles. This is something LeBron acknowledged during his press conference on Sunday. But when I first heard of talks between the Warriors and Lakers, you know, via the reporting, my first reaction was it kind of makes some sense, right? Like, if you're the Lakers and you get LeBron the last year of his deal and you're a team that's kind of going nowhere, if you could pry Jonathan Kuminga loose from the Warriors, it's a pretty big win. I think Jonathan Kuminga is going to be a star. Like, I think he has all-star written all over him in the next 2 to 3 years. And if you're the Warriors, you've kind of ditched this whole, you know, two-pronged strategy of winning now and building later with the young guys. You're all in on winning now. Steph is still playing at a high level. You add LeBron to Steph and Draymond, and hopefully Klay can get his act together, you know, over the final 30 games of the season. You might be onto something there. So, I don't know. What did you think of the report that the Warriors and Lakers at least discussed on a nominal level a LeBron James trade?
Yeah, obviously it's always a fun and fascinating time there's news developments involving Lakers, Warriors, LeBron, and it is all certainly accurate, but after Woj broke it, what was stressed to me from the Warriors end is, yeah, of course they made the call about LeBron, but it was under the guise of just trying to gauge to what degree he's available. From my understanding, it never got to the point, certainly the Lakers shut it down immediately, but it never got to the point with the Warriors internally about the question is, about, okay, what are we willing to give up to get LeBron James? And obviously you're going to have to give up a lot, but where is that line of demarcation that the Warriors would have there? Don't fully know the answer to that. And so that's, I think, what would have been interesting hypothetically, if the Lakers started listening and started talking to specifics, how all in would the Warriors have been? And I think to what you were saying, they're past the two timeline approach. They're about trying to maximize Steph Curry's window. But I think even within that, they are wrestling with what is the best pathway to maximize his window. And I think when it pertains to LeBron, obviously you'd have to give up, but would they be comfortable giving up, almost everyone across the board except for Steph, when you're including, you know, Klay, Kuminga, Draymond, draft picks? I don't know where the line was at with that, but fortunately for the Warriors, they didn't have to entertain that line just yet. But it'll be fascinating to see if they ever do that. But I think LeBron, even before he reiterated this point during All-Star Weekend, it's been expected that he's going to retire as a Laker. Nothing's guaranteed, and certainly he fed speculation when he declined to say what he would do with his player option. But I think that's only under the guise of there's no harm in keeping your options open. And it's not just about what LeBron is looking at on how well the Lakers are going to do in the playoffs or how well, they do anything with roster moves. I mean, he would have to make that decision anyway before free agency starts, but it's really about also how well can he maintain this strong level of play? Does he still prioritize being on a place that's going to give him that hypothetical chance to still get his fifth ring? Or is it about just enjoying the last few years and soaking satisfaction out of that and also being in LA close to his kids. And then the other obvious variable is, what does Bronny do? Is he even going to declare himself draft eligible after his freshman season, especially because he's played with a limited workload following his cardiac arrest? Does both parties even want to have this partnership? LeBron put it out there in the atmosphere that he would love to play with his son, but he has since walked it back a little bit, just saying that, hey, it might not just be my decision. Maybe this isn't something Bronny wants. So there's a lot of moving parts here, as you can imagine. But I think regardless of that, even before LeBron said what he said during All-Star Weekend, there's been a feeling from the Lakers and outside that he'll just stay with the Lakers through however long his NBA career lasts.
Yeah, and I think for LeBron, the big opportunity with the Lakers comes this summer, right? When they can deal as many as three first-round draft picks, and those three first-round draft picks might be enough to get their hands on a marquee player, whether it's Trae Young, DeJounte Murray, somebody else that's out there. They've got some options after this season is over. And look, I've said all along that the Lakers did the right thing. I don't think it made any sense to give up like one of their picks plus, you know, the contract of D'Angelo Russell for someone like Bruce Brown. I don't think that moved the needle enough for them to deal that type of capital right now. This spring and this summer is high noon for the Lakers. This is when they make their last stand, and I think LeBron understands that and sees a pathway to them becoming a contender once again. Last thing for you. Before the All-Star break, spent some time around Milwaukee. Went to a couple of games in Milwaukee, traveled with them to Memphis for their last game before the All-Star break, and I got to see the full Milwaukee, right? I got to see the full breadth of the Milwaukee Bucks, where they take on Denver and pummel them at home. The next night, they get pummeled by the Miami Heat. Two nights later, in a game they absolutely positively should have won for the All-Star break, they get beat by the artist formerly known as the Memphis Grizzlies. Their G League team, their zombie team, they get beat by the Memphis Grizzlies. This is a team with a lot of pressure, right? Damian Lillard is 31. Chris Middleton is 32. Giannis is 29. They made the bold decision to fire Adrian Griffin and bring in Doc Rivers as the head coach. And look, being around that team, Mark, I understood why the decision was made. This team was not improving defensively. They were in the bottom third defensively. And even though they won the last couple of games that Griff coached, gave a lot of points in those games. So John Horst, management in Milwaukee, they didn't see this team on a path that would lead it to the NBA Finals. So they bring in Doc Rivers, who guarantees nothing, should be pointed out. Like, that doesn't, but he's a new voice. And what Doc has tried to do out there is really simplify things, streamline things, make things more digestible for his team, whether it's offensively playing more two-man game with Giannis and Dame, defensively not having so many coverages that players have to remember and go to. So I can see what they're trying to do. The question is there enough time for this team to do it? They've got the talent. Giannis is going to be the best player on the floor in virtually every series Milwaukee plays in. Dame is going to be a top four player in virtually every series Milwaukee plays in. They've got some guys, they've got a little bit of depth. Is there enough time in your mind for this Milwaukee team to become a championship contender?
Yes and no. I don't think there's enough time in the sense that I am bullish on the Boston Celtics, and I love their starting lineup. I love the chemistry that Kristaps Porzingis has shown and his durability, as well as Drew Holiday. I think also philosophically, what we've seen through this season, through the ups and downs with Adrian Griffin, the integration with Doc Rivers and the transition there without a training camp, is philosophically, it's impossible for them to be the same defensive team as they were without Drew Holiday. But with those caveats aside, they should have what it takes to be a substantially much more better team. With mitigating his absence, with having what you were saying, Doc Rivers simplifying defensive schemes and responsibilities. Giannis is a great defender. So is Brooke Lopez. Pat Beverly, sometimes it's hit or miss as far as sometimes he gets wrapped up too much in the individual defensive matchup and the trash talking than the team scheme, but he is a good defender. The other thing is, from the very jump with this trade, the idea was that when they got Damian Lillard, the message was, oh, we don't care about defense, but it was about, well, we have so much offensive depth and so much offensive potential that that's going to be our calling card. And while both parties have shown a lot of promising signs, it can reach a higher level. So I think it should be enough time for them to figure all those things out to be substantially better than they have been this season. But I don't think there's enough time that, barring any injuries from Boston, that's going to be enough to get through them and a presumed Eastern Conference Finals matchup.
Yeah, it's going to be challenging. There's no doubt about that. I think the encouraging signs of the Doc Rivers era, which, look, the numbers are the numbers. He's 3-7 in the 10 games that he's coached. They have been better defensively. They are 12th in defensive efficiency over the last 10 games. Going into that Memphis game, I think they were 8th or somewhere around there. Like they have shown improvement over a 10-game stretch on the defensive end. And I think the more time passes and the more repetitions that Dame and Giannis get together, they're only going to get better. And even though Damian Lillard has not had deep postseason success, I think you and I would both agree he is a built-for-the-postseason type of player. Like, he is not afraid of the moment, and he is going to make some big shots for that team in the postseason. And look, the guts of that team that won a championship in 2020 is still there. I mean, Dame and Jrue Holiday got swapped out, but Giannis, Brook Lopez, Bobby Portis, Pat Connaughton, Chris Middleton, of course, like, they are still there. So I'm going to say maybe they can become a championship contender. I need to see what this team looks like coming out of the All-Star break first couple of weeks. I think they have a game against Boston on, is it March 20th, I want to say. Like, that's a game I'm circling on the calendar, Mark. Like, that's enough time to have passed with Doc Rivers on the sideline, with the pieces you have in place, the system you have in place. That's enough time to find out if this team has what it takes. I think they have to approach that game like it's a playoff game, like it's a playoff elimination game. Like, you want to see what your team's got against the very best the Eastern Conference, maybe the NBA, has to offer. So that's the game I'm looking at. I know teams don't like to say, ah, oh, it's a regular season game, 1 of 82. That to me is not. That is a playoff-type game they have to look good in.
Yeah, and I think if we are going to find any potential silver lining in this All-Star weekend that, you know, as we mentioned, didn't have a great showcase game, in the Bucks' case, some of these developments could have a positive carryover effect. The fact that they lost the Memphis Grizzlies, which was abysmal, the fact that there's no Ja Morant, Jaren Jackson, Marcus Smart, Desmond Bane, it led Giannis, as you know, because you were there, having a lot
of playing Lamar Stevens long minutes, like in that game. Yeah. Like, Lamar Stevens just signed there like that day or something. It was close. Crazy.
Wow, that's wild. But, you know, those post-game comments I saw that you highlighted from Giannis, I thought that those were very on point, and I thought it sent a message, and it was a lot of tangible things that I'm sure that he and Dame and the entire team is digesting over this weekend, and they're going to discuss more once practice resumes. Look, All-Star weekend's All-Star weekend, but Damian Lillard winning the three-point contest, gain MVP, like, those are very specific things. So it's a stretch to say, oh, this is going to carry over into actual games. But I think the feeling of having a nice weekend with feel-good moments can at least provide some good vibes once the team reconvenes. But it's the bigger point that you've outlined, that you know, they should have what it takes because of the fact that Doc Rivers is simplifying things. They have shown some relative improvement, and the offensive potential is there, and they've seen it. They just have to put it all together on a consistent basis. And they're not only losing to teams that have G League rosters, but they're actually competing consistently like they did against the Denver Nuggets the other night.
Maybe the most interesting team to watch in the second half of the season, the Milwaukee Bucks, because they've got pressure short term. And look, I know Dame's under contract for a few years. Giannis just signed a contract extension, but as you well know, Mark, contracts are meaningless in today's NBA. If a player doesn't believe that it's working in a particular situation, he very easily can get out of that situation. So there's got to be that sense of urgency in Milwaukee to win right now. Mark Medina, good stuff. Check him out over at Sports Key to listen at Fox Sports Radio, a whole bunch of different outlets. Thanks for joining me, Mark.
Chris, appreciate you as always. I'm glad at least that this NBA segment was a lot more substantive and hopefully more entertaining than the All-Star game.
I certainly hope so. How can it not be?
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make high-quality clothing for a summer wardrobe you'll love, all made right here in the USA. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.